It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics, and this is an emergency podcast again. Usually Dave does that, but Dave's checking his phone.
I am trying to get information that we're going to need later on in this conversation.
This is
but no, in reality, I was trying to get the sound effect to go.
Oh, is that what you were looking for?
Yeah.
We'll find it someday.
You could have done it with your mouth. That's what Steven did.
I was stepping it up.
I am your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And David Redfield's in the studio.
Hello.
At this point, you've been on like the last five.
Yeah.
And I have no idea when we publish these because we just record them every week and then we decide when we put them out.
Well, I like
so I have no idea if you've been on the last five or if you've been on two and three that people
depends
have.
Depends on when it comes
the
out.
The last one that just aired last week's or 2 weeks ago.
You're on that one.
That was my first one. And I only know
was
that because we're talking like,
but it was like
in
the
November,
third time you
in
were
November,
on.
We should be here and there. The Christmas special is coming out in 2 months and we're like, okay.
Yeah, that's the
we try to be topical.
This is why we need to start doing
every week.
And today,
live streaming.
Today in the studio for the first time, we have Doug Junius.
How's it going, everybody?
Woo-hoo! So this is not a good week.
This is a death-filled week.
Because we were, when we started doing this, right after we taped the podcast last week, which hasn't aired because I don't know what I'm doing. I schedule this based on the TARDIS, apparently. It's just all over the place.
Oh, whatever that temperamental machine decides
just
to post.
Timey-wimey ball
yeah.
of...
Yeah,
everything.
Eventually I'll be a different person on one of them. It'll be in black and white.
Right.
But right after we taped the last one, we found out that Bruce Timm is stepping down from DC Animation after 20 years. Because he's done everything.
Yeah, when did it... He started in
92,
it starts.
When Batman Animated?
It came out immediately after Batman Returns. But he was working on it since like 91.
Right.
So he was working on it in between Batman and Batman Returns. And then it's rarely had a break. I mean, it went right from Batman the Animated Series to Batman and Robin to Superman to Batman Beyond to Justice League to Justice League Unlimited right into the 12 or so films.
Yeah.
So this is major that he's stepping down. And that would be enough for a podcast if people didn't keep dying.
Yeah.
So we also also on Friday... Which, Steven, you didn't even know about this. Carmen Infantino.
Yeah.
Who was one of the architects of the Silver Age. He created the Barry Allen Flash. He redesigned Batman, gave him the yellow oval, and saved him from cancellation 2 years before the Adam West show.
Yeah.
And
I think people forget that, is that the Batman book, the sales on Batman were so anemic. They were like, let's cancel this book. Like, let's get it over with.
What?
And then that show came out and, like, revived Batman.
But yeah, but I don't...
In a weird, goofy way.
But Batman would not have even existed...
On Carmen Infantino.
For the show to find it. And
yeah.
The show was looking for any superhero. If you read the Bat book about the series, they did not care who the superhero was going to be.
They just wanted a superhero show.
Yeah, they couldn't get Superman because it was still tied up with the George Reeves show, even though it wasn't running. And which is also why they did Green Hornet as a spinoff. They looked at like four or five different ones. And Marvel wasn't quite a player enough to talk about. But had it not been for Carmen Infantino... The Silver Age probably wouldn't happen. Marvel probably wouldn't have happened because the Flash kicks off everything that leads up to Justice League.
That's what everyone considers the Silver Age of comics starting is when they reintroduce the Flash. And they could have just as easily brought the old Flash back with like the Doughboy helmet and the little wings on his boots. But then they were like, well, let's calm the Flash, keep the same powers, but let's give him a sleek new design. And now he's got like an actual like scientific... background
wasn't that like all the characters that they were bringing back all
yeah,
of them
yeah,
had like
was,
science as their
science
background.
Came
that was the
into
main
play.
Thing was science.
Well, Green Lantern was another huge one.
Well,
yeah.
look what's happening in history at that time. We have the space race starting. You have all these things that are going on now that are involving science, and science is becoming
it's where
the
America
thing.
Was at the time
right.
was like
the
all right,
Cold
let's
War's
get
going
more
on.
Scientific. People are looking at like nuclear technology and all this stuff.
That's why.
Well, that's why Darwin Cook's New Frontier is so brilliant because it dovetails what was going in comics, with what was actually going on in history and addressing it head on. And you really see that it's that late 50s, early 60s, the Mad Men era. It's, it's very much the post-war boom and the exploration in space and the explosion of technology, all influencing that. And that, but it's because Carmen Infantino redesigned the Flash, and that was a success.
Yeah,
and helped out with Green Lantern, although John Broome and Gil Kane did that, and that led up to Justice League of America. Their sales went up enough for Martin Goodman to tell Stan Lee to copy it.
Yeah.
And Stan Lee creates the Fantastic Four, which, as we know, creates Marvel.
Right.
So really, without Carmen Infantino, you don't have the Silver Age.
I would say he's probably, and this is a shame because most people don't even know who Carmen Infantino is, mm-hmm. is he's probably as impactful as Stan Lee, where it's just like, you know, without him, it's just like the whole, that's it, like superhero comics. Like he reinvented superhero comics again.
He did.
Saved them.
And he saved them.
And even later, he creates Dead Man. He does the first Dead Man.
Is he Dead Man?
Yeah, he created it, did the first issue, then handed it off to Neil Adams. And he is also, as I just finished Marvel Comics, The Untold Story.
That's the name of that book I can never remember that you all should read.
Which you recommended and Mike Lawrence recommended. But he was also the reason that Jack Kirby went to DC. Carmen Infantino told Jack Kirby in 67 when he was unhappy, why don't you come over to DC? And Kirby's like, nah, I'm not ready yet. And then when he finally got fed up.
Yeah, fed up enough.
Fed up enough. Well, in those 2 years, he created all of the Fourth World for Thor and Fantastic Four and did not give them to Marvel.
Yeah.
So then when he was ready to leave, he called Carmen Infantino. He came over for dinner and he's like, here's all my characters.
Yeah.
And Carmen Infantino's like, we'll give you 4 books.
That's what's awesome is there's an alternate universe out there where Jack Kirby, and this really happened, Jack Kirby went up to Stan Lee and said, all right, here's what I want to do with Thor, because he was still writing and drawing Thor at the time. He's like, I want to kill Thor, have Ragnarok, and introduce all these new gods that are going to have, like, this planet, and there will be evil gods and new gods, and basically the Fourth World shit. He invented that for Thor, and yep. Stan Lee's like, are you kidding? Thor is one of our best characters. We can't kill him. You can't do this. And then Jack Kirby's like, well, fuck this, and went over to, you know, DC. And then it's just like, now we've got Orion and Darkseid. Yep. Like, yep. There's an alternate universe out there where Darkseid is a Marvel villain. Like, how crazy is
and
that?
And then he turned into Thanos.
Yeah. And, yeah. And then exactly, yeah. Who is the guy who's jonesing for cosmic characters? Jim Starlin.
Mm-hmm. Jim Starlin copied Darkseid to be Thanos. But then, this is what I don't understand. When Jim Starlin gets to DC, he creates Mongol,
who's a copy of
Darkseid. And I'm like, why aren't these stories just Darkseid?
One guy. Well, then he did. Didn't Jim Starlin have like a indie thing in the 90s where he created another big, bulky
Breed? It was a Malibu comic.
There you go.
Yes.
So he, like, three times.
All he likes is giant, evil guys are cosmic. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, big, stony
guys. That's his thing.
I've never seen a picture of Jim Starlin, but I kind of think he might be the thing.
I picture Jim Starlin as like Napoleon. Like Darkseid with like a hat and like a jacket, like thing you wear with like sunglasses, and nobody knows he's like a giant rock monster.
When you said Darkseid with a hat, I immediately imagined a baseball cap.
I was thinking a fedora.
Trying to blend in like, Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
Like, go Cubs.
Right.
I will destroy the stocks with my Omega beams.
Oh. Yeah, so there's that.
Okay, so he died.
So he died, and then tangentially connected to the podcast, but we do talk a lot about movies, and we are based in Chicago, so I think that really hits home, is that Roger Ebert passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what day was that?
That was
Wednesday,
early,
I think. Yeah. Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah. It was
early in the week.
A little earlier in the week, yeah, and he had just announced that the cancer came back. He announced like the day before he passed away. So I think it was one of those, like when Freddie Mercury died. Like Freddie Mercury announced he had AIDS like right before he died. Mm-hmm. So I think he knew for a long time.
Oh, you mean when pure cosmic power devoured his body, not died, right?
Yes, because he is the champion, my friend.
That's right.
He kept on fighting until the end, yes.
Yeah, it's how much of a cultural vacuum I live in is I didn't know who Roger Ebert was until Siscal died.
Siskel died a long time. Siskel died like late 90s.
Yeah, I remember that one.
I was still in grade school, and I'm like, wait, who is that? And then I'm like, oh, he's that guy that everyone talks about.
The movie guy.
And then it was like, oh, so there's another guy, and that guy's still alive, and then he died.
Yeah, yeah, because Siskel died very suddenly in the late 90s. And I used to watch Siskel and Ebert all the time, I think going back to early 80s.
Yeah, they had a show, right?
Yeah, it was on PBS first. And they were on that for a long time. Then they got bought by Disney. And then they moved over to network. And then first it was just called that. It was called like Sneak Previews and At the Movies. And they were just the two guys who were on it. And they were kind of interchangeable. Like, oh, let's just get two film critics and put them on there.
Yeah.
And then they got big enough where Disney bought them out. And it became Siskel and Ebert At the Movies. And I always used to watch them in the early 80s just because they would talk about Star Wars. And they would talk about the Muppets. And they would review everything.
Yeah.
And that's when I get really into it. And then in the 90s, or so. Once I got to like college age, which was also the time when the indie movie boom happened, like the post Reservoir Dogs, where there's just movies everywhere. Like every indie movie got attention, and very, very few of them deserved it. You know,
this is like the door that Kevin Smith snuck in.
Yeah,
you know, before
exactly.
it closed.
Clerks is revolutionary, Steven.
And never closed it.
Right, yeah.
There's one good part of Clerks, okay? There's one. That whole Star Wars argument.
I feel like there's 37 good parts in Clerks.
I feel like they all add up to 12 seconds.
And six dick jokes.
You would consider that the good part of that movie?
No, there's no good part of that movie.
This could devolve immediately into an hour, but that would be terrible for the people who died.
Let's not talk about Kevin Smith. While,
yeah, let's not spend an hour talking about Kevin Smith while Roger Ebert and Carmen Infantino are in the ground.
Right, the bodies aren't even cold yet.
Kevin Smith has 12 podcasts and a reality show. He can talk about himself.
He's fine, and he usually does.
Yeah, he had Jeff Loeb on this week. He's got enough talking done.
So what does this mean for DC Animated then? So now...
It's a very bleak day.
So going back,
that's
to
a great transition.
Yeah.
Speaking of DC.
Yeah. Speaking of DC.
It's kind of like we're gonna just do round robin on the topics, and Steven's just gonna change them.
I'm just like reining us in, guys.
So in about 5 minutes, we'll get into a deep seated argument about Batman Beyond, and then all of a sudden, Steven will go, "Yeah, that cancer took his jaw," and then
he looked really funny.
Just switch gears.
That's terrible.
The one thing.
What's that guy's name? Who's taken over?
James Tucker.
Not Chris Tucker.
He worked on Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, but more importantly, he ran Batman the Brave and the Bold, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
So I am not worried about where the movies are going.
And he was actually producing on Young Justice, too. He was with Bruce Timm doing a producing for Young Justice.
Yeah, I feel like he's been a guy who's probably been around attached.
For
a while.
He's
I mean,
been
even...
in the Timm camp for a long
time. I actually think, unless they really want to stick with artists, I think had Dwayne McDuffie survived, he might have taken over. Unless as I was saying, you really want an artist in charge. He was a writer.
Even Darwin Cook. Darwin Cook used to animate for the Batman, and then Batman Beyond. Yeah. He did a lot of design work.
Well, he did the opening. Yeah,
he did the title sequence, and then shifted right into comic work. Then,
because he starts doing comics,
which is I think why New Frontier got made quicker than some of the other comic properties, like Dark Knight Returns didn't get made for. You know, or Dark Knight Strikes Again, or whatever that Frank Miller, you know, didn't get made for years because it was, you know, he didn't have the in. You know, Darwin Cook's like, well, I did the New Frontier, like, let's animate that.
Cook
and he knows all those guys.
Darwin Cook also, the first thing he took was the Catwoman relaunch. And
the costume redesign,
which even survived the New 52.
Yeah, we mentioned that a couple days ago.
That's her costume
now,
the black jumpsuit with the goggles.
Yeah.
That's probably the most iconic costume Catwoman has ever had. And Brubaker was writing that run.
Yeah.
So people were really into it. So I think. Between those two, when he was like, I have an idea for the Silver Age, they were ready to do it. But I think the DC movies are in good hands. The one thing which I don't know how I feel about was I was reading an interview with James Tucker right afterwards, and he said he's not too interested in doing straight adaptations.
Oh, that kind of
so
stinks.
He kind of wants to do more original stories, and I haven't been that crazy.
But we'll see that because he's doing Superman Unbound, Unbound, the new one. He's the executive producer on that one.
Right,
for the first
time. And he's doing Flashpoint.
What's Superman Unbound?
Oh, they're bringing Flashpoint.
But you see,
I don't know why they're animating
it. It actually looks really good. They're doing a nice job with it. Tucker is taking control of this thing, and he's actually taking the storylines and melding them together into something that can stand on its own. So it's no longer just the comic book fan is going to love this storyline. We can now get the average Joe into it,
too. It'd be like a looser adaptation.
Right. Although, after Dark Knight Returns, I think everybody was so excited by how well they did that a lot of the talk online and even in the shop was just like, hey, what other stories can we do? Can we do Nightfall now? Can we, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that was the idea. I remember when they first announced that they were going to go straight to DVD movies. They showed... I was there... I think it was like the first C2E2. They showed images of... you know, Death of Superman, and people were going, oh, wow, and they're like, we got one more, and then you saw the New Frontier, and people were going crazy, and then everyone's going like, Kingdom Come, and it's like, we're gonna do another Superman after that one, no Kingdom Come yet, but like...
I think Kingdom Come, it's like, how do you translate Alex Ross? You could do it in CG and really spend a long time on it, but you can't really do that straight-up Bruce Timm style and do Kingdom Come.
No, that's the thing, is they always seem to... grab a little from the art. Even when they did like Public Enemies, it was more Ed McGuinness, bulkier figures.
That's still like when Ed McGuinness first left Deadpool and went to DC and started doing Superman, my first reaction was, this is a very Bruce Timm Superman.
Yeah.
So he was kind of in that vein already.
Well, because he gave Superman that cancer's like, huge big guy look.
That big guy, and he was very, very round and very lean on the details. Yeah, like no cross hatching.
He's very lumpy.
Figures. Yeah, they're very and very black outline. Yeah, which I
it looked like animation.
Yeah, I love Ed McGuinness for that. But I do remember when they announced that, they announced a few movies that never got made. They were supposed to do New Teen Titans Juice Contract. And what they found was when they did Superman and Batman, it sold double anybody else. So Wonder Woman was the worst selling movie they put out. And it was a great movie.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best ones. Yeah,
I remember seeing that and being phenomenal. Like, oh, Wonder Woman's, who cares? And like Alfred Molina plays like Ares. It was awesome.
I saw that at a screening at New York Comic Con and thought, well, you know what? This one I'm not going to buy. So I'll just go and see it for free since I'm here at the con. And it was so great that I immediately bought it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't really translated. This is DC's problem all the time, and this is the problem they're finding in the movies, is that Batman sells really, really well, Superman sells well, nobody else sells.
Yeah.
Well, and but that's changing, though. Arrow has taken on this new persona. It's bringing Green Arrow out. I can't tell you. Today, I had three people come in the store asking me specifically, do you have anything about this Green Arrow character, this Arrow character?
Yeah, like, that book's been selling better, and I've heard from everyone that show's awesome.
Really?
It is amazing. Yeah.
I've had a hard time because it looks so much like Smallville.
That's why I couldn't get into it.
But it's better.
Fool me once.
Fool me once, WB.
Damn you, it's WB. Better, though.
John, I was like you. You guys know me. I like Green Arrow. Green Arrow is one of my heroes. And because of this show, he's now in the spotlight. And they're making that character way more gritty.
Yeah, what they'd have to do is they'd have to keep that and roll that into like the Justice League. So if they do that movie, it's like, all right, well, don't waste time introducing Green Arrow. Just use the guy from the show.
Well, that's what they're doing for Flashpoint is if they change the title and it's called like Justice League, the Flashpoint. So even though Flash is the main character in it.
Okay. And that makes sense because they did.
They're making it a Justice League story. Well, it also makes sense from a marketing perspective because if you have all the characters in it, then Justice League sells, then you just stamp Justice League on it, and that tells you all of the main DC characters are in this.
But it's a Flash story or whatever.
Yeah, and I was just saying, I was not a fan of the Flashpoint book. I mean, it was a big Elseworlds to me.
Yeah,
but I'm curious because I am a fan of the Flash, and my first thought, we were going to do a show about the end of Young Justice and
that was Green Lantern, a sad day.
Which, you know, we have to, this might turn into.
We could just lump that into this one.
You guys have 3 hours? Sit back.
There are no time constraints on podcasts.
That's true.
But when Green Lantern ended, my first thought as I watched the final episode was, I would love to see this team do the Flash because I would love to see this CG animation stripped down Bruce Timm style done for the Flash and see these speed effects.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much could they do with like him like vibrating through walls and stuff? That'd look awesome.
And slow motion is very hard to do in traditional animation because you have to draw more frames for it.
Yeah.
So, but in CG, it makes no difference. So
that's true. Just I him didn't even phasing think about
through
that.
Objects or things slowing down around him, I thought would be perfect.
Getting to see him like run through the city and how the city reacts and everything, it would have been... I think it would have been great for the eyes.
Now, what
and the villains are so much fun.
Now, because that's what happened, right? They DC was doing Young Justice, they were doing Green Lantern, and then they're like, okay, they wanted to do two different shows.
Well, they were doing these shorts, and it was basically like they were going to create a DC Nation, especially after Marvel was purchased by Disney, and Disney XD is a channel that's geared more towards like boys, you know, and
Ultimate Spider-Man, and, the Avengers, and, all those shows.
Yeah, so like the idea was Marvel was going to be like, okay, we get an hour block. We're going to do the Avengers. We're going to do Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate Spider-Man was being, you know, kind of taken off from the Ultimate Spider-Man comic. Then they were just like,
well, they canceled Spectacular Spider-Man for it because Disney wasn't producing that. Spider-Man was the first big Disney produced.
And this was
Marvel Studios with Jeff Loeb in charge. Animated series.
Yeah. And this is all supposed to be tied up with the Avengers. Because if you know, like, you know, Fury and Agent Coulson are in it. And they're the same from the Avengers movie.
Yeah, Fury, Samuel Jackson, and everything.
Yeah. And then the next thing that was going to happen when they canceled Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes, they were going to bring back another Avengers. It's going to be called New Avengers, but it was supposed to be tied in with the Avengers movie too. And that's like you were going to see kind of like Luke Cage's origin in there and stuff like that. Because basically it was all going to build up to having like, you know, that synergy of like, hey, you have the movie for the adults and you have the cartoons for the kids. And then you see so much toy lines coming out now based on the Ultimate Spider-Man TV show.
Yeah.
And the next thing was they were going to add more. I have no idea if they're adding any more additional shows. I don't even know what's going on with the Avengers. But I did remember seeing images and like costume designs and character designs for a Hulk TV show they were going to do, a cartoon Hulk TV show.
Hulk Agents of Smash.
Okay, so that is
coming, yeah.
Agents of Smash?
Agents of Smash, and it's like all the strong guys in the Marvel Universe together, like Abomination is in it.
Oh,
like
I did see something.
Red Hulk was supposed to be in it.
I just read an article this week, so it is happening. I think it's this fall.
All right, well, what about DC, though?
Well, DC's response was they were going to do DC Nation.
Right, and don't forget, DC and Cartoon Network are both owned by Warner Brothers, so they already had the connection that Disney just got. So they were like, well, you know, we already own a Cartoon Network. Just put it on there. Yeah.
So that's when they came out with the Green Lantern TV show, CG.
And Young Justice.
And Young Justice. And Young Justice apparently was not doing that great in the ratings. And the Green Lantern wasn't doing as well. They were looking at numbers for Batman the Animated Series with the Green Lantern.
You can't.
And again,
compare.
With DC, it's like they want everybody to hit Batman numbers.
They can't expect
They don't
that.
Understand why it doesn't happen, and when it doesn't happen, they yank it. Well, which is why I think we've already talked about the Green Lantern movie.
Yeah.
There's so much second-guessing on that movie that it's a mess. They just throw in everything, and there's no clear storyline.
And John, you and I discussed about those two TV shows. They weren't really geared towards children. Yeah. Like, the topics that they would talk are a little bit above their heads. And the fact that, like, each episode was, like, part 9 of part 36.
Right. And that was my problem with Green Lantern. We talked about this in the shop but not on the podcast, was I thought Green Lantern was a really good show. But when it ended, knowing that there was no season 2, I was like, okay, we just saw this 26-episode arc, and it wasn't about Hal Jordan.
Yep.
And that's the only Green Lantern series we'll probably ever get.
Yeah.
And it was such a missed opportunity to, like, focus on these characters that they created, it, like Clone Wars. But in Clone Wars, it was squeezing itself in between two existing movies. Mm-hmm. So there was only so much you could do with the established characters. And Green Lantern, they were like, well, just create some characters and we'll make it be about them. And it didn't even live in the movie universe.
And it didn't really have a toy line. If you watch...
No, it never did. They didn't even show it at Toy Fair.
Well, if you watch Young Justice, the first season, you'll notice, like, you know, they have all their costumes. And then what's the next thing to do? They have missions where they go on, and then they have stealth missions.
I was going to say, right?
Where they hit a little token and their costumes change. And that was because it means now you have to buy this toy. And then when you want to have your guy go on a stealth mission, you have to buy that toy. And what happened was... Not many Young Justice figures were coming out, and that's money that they were trying to cash through.
That fell through the cracks, too. As the prices went up, what they tried to do was give them really big bases and make them box figures and sell them for like $20-25.
Weren't they tiny little figures, too?
No, they were the same size as DC Universe.
Oh, okay.
They had two lines. I'm sorry. They had the 4-inch line, which was about the size of Justice League, and then the deluxe figures were the size of DC Universe.
Okay.
But they were crazily priced. And the DC Universe, like, Robin was just Robin with a new head.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it was right around the time that the oil prices have shot everything up, which is why we've been planning on an action figure podcast for a while, and that's one of the topics we need to get to soon. But one of the problems is the oil prices rising raises the price of plastic.
Yeah.
And, like everything else, raises the price of shipping. So we've seen figures which kind of held their price point for over 20 years. I mean... When the first Star Wars movie came out, those figures were $3. And when Revenge of the Sith movie figures came out, they were $5.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much of a jump. Now, how much of the Marvel Universe in the store?
They're like $20. They're like $19.99 or something.
Yeah, and the 3 3/4 figures are like
$15. Those are $15. And that's we have to mark those down from what we should be charging for what our cost is, just so we can compete with like Target and stuff. Like we're probably losing money on those.
Well,
figures.
Diamond is always going to charge you more than Target, but the fact is that you have to charge $14.95 for a figure that was $9 3 years ago in mass market retail. So that's like a 50% jump. And a few years before that, they were $5-6.
Yeah.
So that's what killed the Young Justice line.
And the reason why we're even talking about toys is, to be honest with you, the only reason cartoons exist is to sell toys. Like, that's the story of He-Man.
Yeah, He-Man,
like,
and G.I. Joe,
He-Man,
right?
Yeah. Which Bruce Timm was part of, and Paul Dini was part of He-Man, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, Paul Dini, some of the Animaniacs guys, like Tom Taranarowitz was on it.
They were just like, here you go.
A lot
here's
of guys got their
guys.
Start on He-Man.
It's like, is this a good guy or bad guy? He looks more like a good guy. All right, he's a good guy.
Yep.
Let them do their thing.
And G.I. Joe and Transformers were part of that
same
way.
Thing, yeah.
Because what happened then was that the government lifted restrictions on what could be put in a children's show, and they basically changed the restriction to be you just can't have commercials for your own product during the show, because kids find that confusing. So then there were He-Man commercials on everything except He-Man. But yeah, but they basically, I mean, even today when there's not as many figure lines, they always sold breakfast cereal.
Yep.
Because before figures were big, Saturday morning was nothing but breakfast cereal commercials. And now video games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and video games have eaten the action figure market for the last 10 years.
Well, now there's a Young Justice video game coming out. Now they have a Young Justice video game.
Well, those things are so long in development that they come out regardless of what else happens.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's been development when they first started a TV show.
Like the show shuts down. It's like, what are they supposed to do? Like, just shelve this thing where they can still make
money?
Sometimes they do. It actually makes sense, though, because the video game's going to pick up right where season one leaves off to season two.
The comics, the Young Justice comics were supposed to be that. Supposed to be like what happens between Young Justice. Oh, the other thing, too, is Young Justice, that was season one. Season two is Young Justice Invasion, and for a lot of people that like would set up their TiVos, they remember when the first three episodes came out, no one caught it. They're like, "What happened? Why? I says Young Justice on my TiVo." It's like, "Yeah, but
this is different.
It's that's Secret Invasion.
That's been happening a lot because I missed season two of Sherlock because they put it under Masterpiece Theater.
Exactly,
because it like went from Downton Abbey to Sherlock, and I put Sherlock in my DVR and nothing happened.
Yeah,
that's also been happening with. The way your system is set up for the pull list, like Hellboy.
Yeah.
I have to, every time there's a new Hellboy miniseries, you have to re-put it
because
in the system because it's a new title.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because, you know, the system we've got is better than what we used to do at the old shop was we had a bunch of, like, note cards, and it would be, like, Hellboy, and then, like, everyone's name, and then you'd have to, like, white out names and then rewrite in new names, and that was pretty terrible. But then you knew if here's the Hellboy card, when a new Hellboy book comes out, everyone gets it. Well, at the store now, it's all digital, so it's like, you know, Hellboy the Wild Hunt, everyone will get that. But then if you don't sign up for like Hellboy from Hell or whatever it is, you're not going to get it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, and then it fucks up our ordering. Like it's
you're
a mess.
You're a giant DVR.
Yeah, we're like a giant not working properly
DVR. We were even worse. We used to have a physical box for everybody.
Yeah.
And we would just write their titles on the side of the box.
so there you go.
After we put all the... Oh, after we put everything on the shelf, we then took the boxes, went back to the shelf.
And that's not bad.
So, that you know, it was incredibly time-consuming. This was also the store where we bagged and boarded every single
Never understand that. How much time I would waste doing that?
It was every amount of downtime was making new
even
bags
and
boards.
Even when we do it where it's like, check this box if you want us to bag and board your books, like specific subscribers will do that. And even that, I'm just like... next week, you know, or this guy won't be in this week. Next week I'll do it, and I never do it, you know.
You're just gonna turn your back on him and be like,
right? I see him coming, you know. I'm like, all right, quick, get his books.
And by the way, that's Chimera Comics, located where it's Steve
19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We keep it real.
Don't ask to bag about your comics.
Sometimes.
But like with every plug, if you just give restrictions,
yeah, right. Like, don't do this. Like, no, don't do
Chimera
that.
Comics, 19 South LaGrange Road. Don't tell me to turn off the TV.
don't ask for a bag with your books.
I will not keep the store open late.
Mm-mm.
But close at 8. So that's like, you know, Young Justice and Green Lantern, they get canceled. No toys.
Right.
Not a big following. Well, see, it's written for older kids rather for like the younger kids who are going to sit there and watch it over and over
again. 9:30 in the morning.
Yep, and that's DC announced Teen Titans and Beware the Batman. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like from a DC
perspective, those are the new shows they're doing.
They thought they were going to expand to 2 hours, and Cartoon Network was basically like, "Oh, good, two new shows. Good, let's get rid of the old shows and we'll just plug them in."
And that's what the shorts were. The shorts were supposed to be like pilot episodes,
right?
And they were going to see like what makes people interested.
It's kind of like the teasers in Brave and the Bold, where like if
Animal Man's
the best with the voice of Weird Al.
Yeah,
really?
Yes, that's weird. That's awesome. Weird Al's voice.
I like the Super Best Friends Forever.
The girls?
That kind of cracked me up.
I liked the Tom Kenny's Plastic Man because he actually made that pilot.
I remember that,
because it's on, if you get the old Ruby Spears Plastic Man DVDs, which I just found out are $7 on Amazon, so I may just buy them. Tom Kenny was reading Kyle Baker's Plastic Man issues.
Kyle Baker pitched that as an animated, he wanted to do that animated, and they're like, no, I'll do it as a comic, and then he did it for like kids, and this is like kids don't read comics, and
it
didn't really sell
I just got them on eBay. I'm reading them now. They are beautiful, and they read like storyboards. But Tom Kenny fell in love with them, and said like, I want to be the voice of Plastic Man. And this is the way we're going to do it. And they made a pilot. It didn't sell the Cartoon Network, so they put it on the DVD. People were talking about it from the DVD. So then they did a couple more for DC Nation, and also they made Tom Kenny the voice of Plastic Man in Brave and the Bold.
Yeah,
they should just do a DC Universe show. I mean, Alex Ross did all these designs for he wanted to do a Captain Marvel cartoon, which is going to be like really
Marvel
really,
or DC Captain Marvel.
DC, like okay. Shazam. And
this
it was
the problem with Captain Marvel. Both Marvel and DC.
That's why DC just did away with it.
It's marvelous.
He's Shazam now. That's
awesome. Yeah, that's Shazam. Good. You know what? Nobody else is called Shazam.
That's true. Fine. They've got it.
Shazam.
But Marvel comes out with Shazam now.
Right. Well, he wanted to do, he had designs for like Mary Marvel, all the kids, like really like old school, like almost like underdog-ish like character designs for all these guys. It looked awesome. And then they were just like, they never did anything with it. You know, it's just like, so everyone wants to get in and has ideas. Just make like a variety show. And let Alex Ross do 12 episodes or whatever of Shazam and then tack it on to like Superman or something that would sell better or whatever, right. Or Batman, you know.
Well, there's the problem right there. You just mentioned it. This is the thing that DC does all the time. I mean, I am a staunch DC fan, but DC is afraid to do anything different because yeah. Superman and Batman are the ones that make the money.
Yeah, Marvel, so it goes back to what John was saying. Yeah, like, that's
Marvel
the only thing they really got.
The balls to say, you know what, we're going to create the, we're going to do the Avengers movie. It could tank.
Yeah, which we DC, mentioned that before.
Listen,
remember, like,
Justice League,
you know,
billion-dollar industry, come on.
Iron Man.
Well, Marvel was, the thing was, Marvel was conservative about it, and the Iron Man and Hulk and Captain America and Thor were all mid-budget movies.
Yeah.
They were cheap directors. They were usually guys that had come off a couple of bombs or hadn't made a lot of movies.
Yeah.
You know, it was guys like Favreau, who had made Elf, but then Zathura didn't make money. Kenneth Branagh, who was, after the 90s, and like, he hadn't really done much, and he was a Shakespearean guy. Or Joe Johnston.
Rocketeer?
Rocketeer and Jurassic Park 3, I think, was his last movie. And, you know,
and you think of the cast
and them. Most of them were unknown. Chris Hemsworth, Chris
yeah,
Evans. You never
pretty
heard.
Much every one of them yeah. was yeah. in Household
Robert
name.
Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr. was pretty much made. In the shape of most of the directors
yeah.
Yeah.
when he made it. But the thing was, Iron Man was such a surprise that DC wasn't trying to recreate the way Iron Man was made. They were trying to recreate the way Iron Man succeeded and just plug Green Lantern into it. And you can see when you watch that movie, they're trying to make him Tony Stark here. They also don't understand what made the character work, so they threw in every single thing yeah. about Green Lantern.
Well, and the thing is, too, with that, like, if you go back, I read online, Geoff Johns was basically, they came to Johns and said, okay, we're going to do Green Lantern as a movie now. Can you give us a storyline? He's like, yeah, here, off his shelf, here's Secret Origins.
Yeah, his Secret Origins would have been an awesome movie.
I mean, Dave and I talked about this too. I think when we saw Spider-Man even, we were like, that would have been the best thing to do is just hand it off to them and say, here you go, make this panel for panel.
The thing is just like, from personal experience, it's just like when you deal with these people, they don't care about story. They just go, how much money can we
make?
Yeah,
how can you make
like,
money?
To be honest, it's a business. Yeah, you know, they're investing their own money and they want to see it come back like, 5 times.
Right. How can it sell and how do we make sure it will sell?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing about movies is 9 out of 10 of them lose money. So they say it's the worst business model if you're a pure businessman.
Yeah, but I was even thinking like, and I'm not like the smartest guy in this room and I'm not the smartest guy in any room, but like even I'm just like, well, if you make a good...
What about in the bathroom?
Well, yeah, well, just the lack of competition. I was just thinking, like, it's like, if I was like a movie guy, I would be like, all right, well, like Iron Man did really well. Well, why did it do really well? And I would think, like, oh, it's a good story, good this and that. And it's
yeah,
just like,
that's
just,
that's where you diverge.
Is that where they don't come?
They say, why does it make money? And they will find details.
Well,
not
yeah.
everybody. I mean, it's everybody
Iron
with
Man,
the same brush.
They'll do
sure.
they'll, what they do is when someone something makes money, they're like, how can it make more money? And then they just go back to what they were doing. But anyway, back to
cartoons.
But
that's also Marvel's yeah. problem. Before you go back to cartoons. That's also Marvel's problem is that if you look at all of their characters, the ones that have really worked, the first one, they left the director alone. They were like, here's a bunch of comics. Just figure out a way to make it work. And it works really well. And then the second one, they just start cramming in every character they can.
Yeah.
And they start cramming in every storyline. And then the director quits. And
that's not until X-Men 3.
But
Iron Man.
Sam Raimi with Spider-Man 3.
He got
Jon Favreau after Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh was not coming back for a Thor 2.
Batman Forever was like that. That's when we got what?
Oh,
we
well,
got,
yeah.
We
well,
got
Batman
Robin.
Forever, once Batman Returns didn't do as well as Batman, they did not want to leave the director in control. And they pushed Burton out, and Schumacher was just happy to work for the studio and just took every note.
Hey yeah. guys, I can do something. I'm Joel Schumacher.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And that's why.
Well, it's like they did Spider-Man is the craziest thing because I remember he wanted to do Spider-Man 2 and he's like, I want to use Kurt Connors. I want to do the Lizard. And like, Doc Ock's more popular to him. He's like, all right, I'll use Doc Ock. And then that did well and he wanted to do Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi. And they were like, all right, well, what villain do you want to use? And he's like, well, how about the Lizard? And like, no one's going to believe a lizard monster. So do this Sandman. Because a guy made out of sand is like so much
way more believable. Than
way more believable. Man. And then he's like, "All right, so they do Sandman, and then they push Venom down his throat." So he gives us a
shot. Well, that was the thing about Raimi was Raimi hates Venom. Well, Raimi only loves the Ditko Spider-Man.
Yeah,
which is why that first one is so his first one's so great and true to the character.
Yeah,
and the second one worked because he's playing in that Ditko universe. He doesn't even go far as Romita Sr.
No,
so
yeah.
So when they crammed Venom
it's
down
like the first 12, 16 issues is
yeah,
where he's
when they crammed
around.
Venom down his throat, he was really unhappy because here's this Todd McFarlane late 80s, 90s
that he does not like at
he
all.
He does not like.
And you see that because Venom's like screechy and kind of annoying and he's like the scum little guy instead
it's
of like.
It's Topher Grace.
Yeah, you know?
I kept expecting a redneck for him to go, "Hey, you dumbass, why don't you get that suit off you?" The entire movie.
Yeah, and he's not even Eddie Brock, because Eddie Brock's like the totally
he's
different
supposed to be like
type
a,
yeah. than
he's
Peter.
Supposed to be, and
he's
this
funny.
Was, I think this was kind of like the idea of like, because like what if a guy kind of like Peter, but like way more down on his luck and not a good person gets
right.
the suit? And
well,
it's like, that's interesting.
The idea well, that, was like, what if Peter Parker didn't have responsibility?
That's, yeah,
what
that's
what
I mean. He's like
what
a scumbag.
Would be, what would he be like?
And that's what Dan Slott's doing in Superior Spider-Man, which is why I'm still there after like 7-8 issues. I mean, that was the first podcast we talked about was when number one was coming out. And it was like, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
But he's been playing that area of basically saying Doc Ock is the Spider-Man that took the other path.
Right.
And, which is an interesting place
it's
to play.
It's not bad,
yeah.
you know? And then whatchamacallit. So Spider-Man 3 does like, okay. And he's going to do 4. He was ready to do 4. And they're like, all right, I want to do the Lizard now. And then they were like, don't do the Lizard. No one will buy that. How about the Vulture? He's like, okay, let's do the Vulture.
And he wanted John Malkovich to be the
which
Vulture.
Would have been awesome.
I want to see that movie.
I wanted him or the guy who's playing the Mandarin. Ben Kingsley. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been good.
That would have been good. And then they were like, all right, well, the Vulture's an old guy. That's not really cool. He's like, well, I'll do the Black Cat too. And like, no, just do a female.
And Anne Hathaway was going to be
which
the
Black is crazy because then she was Catwoman.
She was Catwoman, yeah.
And then they were like, well, make the Vulture character a girl because nothing says sexy villain female
like a Vulture,
like Green Bird Lady. And
the
then
Green
he,
Bird Lady.
Well,
and then
in,
he was just like,
Brazil.
Fuck all of this. And he walked.
Yep.
And then they're like, okay, new guy, do Spider-Man. What do you want to do? How about the Lizard? And they're like, all right, do the Lizard. And it's just like, are you fucking kidding me? We could have just a fourth Spider-Man movie instead of a reboot.
Did you see James Franco
talking
about Amazing Spider-Man?
You know what? I keep on meaning to watch that. I haven't. What happened?
It's so great because he does not
it's
care.
It's like 2 minutes.
Well, he's this big a name now. Like, he's talking about Oz and somebody's like, hey, have you seen Amazing Spider-Man? He's like, yeah. And they go, what'd you think? He goes, it could have been different than the one we did.
Yeah.
You know what? Sam and I made that movie. Now we're making Oz.
Yeah.
Like, not political at all. Just kind of lame.
Yeah, he doesn't like quite take a dump on the movie, but no. he doesn't mince any words. He doesn't leave you any like it's like, oh, he might have meant that positively. It's like he's like, nah, they pretty much did the same thing we
and
did.
Amazing Spider-Man, after I walked out of it, I was like, okay, this is the one you gotta get through and maybe they'll do something interesting.
Doesn't
and then they immediately
stink?
Then they immediately say Jamie Foxx is Electro and Paul Giamatti is the Rhino.
That's
then I was just like, we're not going anywhere good.
No, this doesn't fill me with any kind of like confidence.
I beg to differ.
You think so?
I think it's gonna be okay.
I'm a rhino. Get out of my way. I'm running like a rhino.
I just want to see it because it's like, it sounds like a comedy. Like,
especially if they team up and rob a bank together.
That's awesome.
I'm going to electrify this bank.
You think he,
yeah, just electrify and I'll run through it like a rhino.
Do you think he just wants to be like the rhino because his buddy was in that wine tasting movie and got
because
to be
he was the
Sandman?
Yeah. That is true. Both guys from Sideways.
I want to make like one of those like fake trailers they do on YouTube where it's like you take images of like what's his name as Sandman and images of what's his name as Rhino and then put in like scenes from Sideways and be like, their supervillain origin happened in California and they both got separate superpowers.
They're in a wine bar like just hitting people.
Yeah. That would be awesome. It's coming to YouTube.
So now Sandra
next year.
So now Sandra Oh has to be Madame Web. That'll just
yeah, exactly. The there you go. That's what
well,
I
well, you know, I do feel at least we're on the right path because we're talking about movies.
Yeah, at least we're
talking
about.
Much about Roger Ebert.
Well, he said what? Spider-Man 2
said,
was the greatest superhero movie ever made.
It is great.
That it's pretty awesome.
That movie's super great. It's
it's still got, that's got to be.
The problem with Spider-Man 1 is, as good as it was, it's like Superman, but it's not as good as the Richard Donner Superman, but it is, you just want to get that origin over with. After you've seen it once, you're like, okay, let's, where Batman Begins, you're so interested in Bruce Wayne,
yeah.
I think
that you're not worried about
it. Yeah, because when you saw Batman come into the picture, I was like, oh, okay, I guess we're done with the whole entire Bruce Wayne
that's
part.
It and that was all something right. Where they didn't yeah. That's never been like they do, you know, year one's as close as we got. You don't ever really see him like traveling the world and learning all the ninjas.
Yeah, there's
stuff.
Never one story. It was always like in a Denny O'Neill story, he'd have a flashback scene yeah, where they pulled from.
So much so that what's his name is doing it in his next Batman story.
Scott Snyder's Scott's, next run is yeah. going to oh, be yeah, year zero.
And it's going to be 13 issues.
And it's and no
did
Batman.
You hear, did you hear what that's supposed to be? In the event that Man of Steel does really well, they contacted Scott Snyder and talked to him, but they want to do, if they reboot Batman for the Justice League movie based on Man of Steel, they're going to use key elements from year zero.
Well, the same way, Doug, as you were saying that Geoff Johns gave them Secret Origin for the Green Lantern movie. Yeah. It's like, can yeah. we use this as a blueprint the way Nolan used year one in Long Halloween?
Yeah.
So I'm sure they won't, I'm sure he won't write the screenplay that's...
He won't.
That's, but at
like,
least he's but yeah, somewhat
but if they find some things they like in it, yeah. they will steal
because
it.
Because that what's supposed to, that's why it's 13 issues. So if
oh,
Man of Steel
really?
Does...
They're
yeah.
going to do a whole...
It's the entire year. Year. Yeah. Wow. And Greg Capullo is doing all 13 issues.
Oh, that's great.
That's awesome.
So,
yeah.
So if you get... So Man of Steel comes out, what, May? And May
June
14th.
June.
So yeah. June 14th, and then you got a year, like what, several months later, you'll know if they're going to go in production. And you'll see like, oh, they're taking this and they're taking that from year zero. So that's why it's kind
of
like...
And again, it's part of that whole nervousness that DC has was when Avengers made $1.5 billion, they were like, oh, we're doing Justice League. And then all of a sudden, a month later, they're like...
I love that.
After Superman,
I'm just like, what record did Avengers break that they were finally like, yeah, we'll do Justice League? It's just like
all of them.
You had like
broke all of them.
That's what I'm saying though. But it's like which, like you know, you can't break them all at once. So there was like a list of
this is the
you know?
Studio that has taken 10 years to make The Hobbit after they made Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
so they're not the most quick of studios
and I get
to capitalize
movies,
on their own success.
Taking movies takes like that's like a minute to make a movie, but it's just like well. Come on, guys! Like it's like, duh. Yes. You know,
it's just everyone's
people
scared.
People would. They're so scared to make a mistake, and you can see it come through. That which when they have somebody like a Christopher Nolan who comes in, is like, no, I don't care. That who's not afraid. Now they want him to produce everything.
Yeah,
you know, and with Tim Burton, they did that too. After the first movie, they were like, "Do whatever you want." But then after Batman Returns, they were like, ooh,
"What
you
did we do?
What if we unleashed?
You did things, you did. And we've talked about Batman Returns.
Once you left the clown out of the box,
the two
or
things
you put the clown in the box.
The two
murdered.
Things we should probably stop talking about on this podcast because we keep hitting it.
Batman,
All Star Batman and Robin, and Batman Returns.
Because my favorite
we
topics.
We just keep coming back to them. But I love how crazy Tim Burton was when he was just like. It was a Batman movie. Now it's a Tim Burton movie!
And that's something they were talking because they wanted to do that third one. Remember Michael Keaton did that interview on,
yes.
Was that the Nerdist he was on?
That Mark podcast. Maron.
Mark Maron, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I would looked at, they wanted to do, like, they never did Batman's origin. And we were going to get, like, Batman Begins yep. in the 90s with Michael Keaton. And then Returns bombed. And then it was just like, well, yeah. fuck it, walk away.
It didn't quite bomb, but it just didn't do as well as Batman. And the
that's
other,
what I don't understand,
thing,
is if it doesn't hit, like, a certain benchmark, they're just like, screw it. It's like, Superman Returns didn't make enough money, but it's like, just roll it into a sequel, guys, and do the next one better instead of a reboot.
And then you get 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, but the crazy thing about the movie industry is like when you have those big production companies like Warner Brothers, MGM, if they don't get enough money back, they cancel any possibility of like futures, like another movie or even a more original story. But when you get like the indie companies or like the lesser well-known production companies, they make a movie, it does well, or even if it makes their money back, they're like, yeah, we'll do it again, and you'll see a second movie. Or even like the director would be like, I have this screenplay I've been wanting to really work on.
Yeah.
He's like, right. Go ahead. And those are like where the really good movies come out.
Well, the stakes
of.
Aren't as high there. The thing about these movies, a movie like Man of Steel, is that's not just Superman for the year. That's Warner Brothers for the year.
That's yeah. their
Warner
big
Brothers
movie.
Looks at their slate and they go, what are our big movies? And right now they're saying it's Man of Steel and The Hobbit. And that's
yeah.
They're like,
and it's opposite ends of the year too.
Like,
so if they take a bath on one, hopefully
right.
the other one will recoup.
But these
it.
Two are going to carry the whole studio, and then we'll make some like we'll make a Steve Carell movie in there, and it'll make a little money.
Yeah,
but it's not going to pay everybody's salary for the next 6 months the way
Superman will.
The way Superman
or hopefully
is supposed
will.
To. So when a movie like that doesn't do well,
well, how about Wolverine? Wolverine, the first movie did terrible, and then they were like, well, yeah. let's just do another one. And it's like, yeah. well, why didn't that one just get
well,
the X?
Because they had done 3 X-Men movies that did really well, and people like.
Ghost Rider.
Jackman.
Ghost Rider.
Nicolas Cage is nuts and you don't want to piss him off. That's all I can think
Nicolas
of.
Who
Cage.
Is scared of Nicolas Cage?
Well, Nicolas Cage needed money. And the fact that they filmed it all in like, what, like Prague or Russia or somewhere. Like,
yeah, a really cheap country.
Yeah, they were just like,
it looks like it.
It honestly was. It honestly was like, yeah, whatever. What do you, how much you need? Yeah, get back to us in 8 months.
I would say the trailer for The Wolverine, it looks like a decent movie. I don't think it looks like a bad movie. It looks pretty cheap. It looks
Oh, really?
It looks like cheaper than X-Men 1. Like not bad cheap, but it's like they're not using a lot of sets. There's no names in it other than Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably going to be a lot of close hand-to-hand fighting, not a lot of CG stuff. It's like I think they're making it on a Ghost Rider level budget.
But that could be a good thing, though.
Yeah, X-Men First Class was a shoestring budget. For a character like
that, because, I mean, you know, he's all about knives and hand-to-hand fighting.
You know, don't need any crazy effects.
Silver Samurai's in that trailer, right?
Yeah, and it's based on the Frank Miller, Chris Claremont storyline, but I think it's going to be based on it as much as we were saying. Year one is Batman Begins.
Yeah, it's like a jumping-off point.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
So this week, since Bruce Timm is leaving DC after 20 years, we're each going to pick our favorite episode or movie from all of his series. And mine goes right back to the very beginning. It was a Paul Dini episode in the first season of Batman the Animated Series called Almost Got Him. And
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's a great one where they're in like this underground poker ring and it's all the villains.
Oh, yeah. They
each tell a story about how they almost got him. So you get... You get a Killer Croc episode, you get a Penguin episode, you get a Two-Face episode, you get a Poison Ivy episode, you get a Joker episode, which has Catwoman in it. And that was the episode where, as soon as it started, I thought it was great. And I thought it was so great that when X-Men started a month later, I went, this is garbage.
Yeah.
And I could not believe that X-Men was getting better ratings. But when I saw Almost Got Him, I was like, wait, this is something that, this is as good as any Batman comic I have ever read.
That episode has my favorite line of animated dialogue in ever. And it's like, they're like, Killer Croc, how'd you almost get him? He's like, I threw a rock at him.
It was like, so there we were in the sewers. He couldn't see, and I snuck up on him and I hit him with a rock. And it's like, that's it, Killer Croc.
It was a big rock. And it's just like, yes.
That was actually my answering machine message for like a month.
Really? That's
like,
awesome.
It was like, I'm not here, call back. I threw a rock at him. And I just like held the answering machine up to the TV.
When you were like playing it on a VCR.
I still like, if it's randomly on the hub or if I pull out a DVD and I see it, I get really excited. I want to put on. That's also when I started following Paul Dini because I was like, and that's when I knew this show was really something special, and in my opinion he never let that level quality
well
drop.
Like, and the best thing at the table, everyone had their little quirks. Like if you saw like Harvey Dent, he with his coffee at half and half.
Yeah,
Joker had like Joker
was
cards.
Joker was pulling out more cards from his sleeve as they were playing.
Yeah, Penguin was drinking tea.
Yeah, there were all these nice little
it's crunches. Like the details.
And that was also the time when one of the things I think made Batman the Animated Series work so well was they really focused on the villains. And they were like, you know, Batman's not just about Batman, Robin, and Alfred. It's about these 12 or so villains. We can flesh all of them out and make them part of a whole community. But that is still my favorite of all the series. Doug?
I'd have to say probably the first two episodes of Batman Beyond. I mean, that came out in 1999, so I was still pretty young at the time, but it hit a really kind of influential time in my life that just it stuck with me. And I watched it again today, and just watching it, I was like, oh wow, I can't remember how big this was in my
universe. I had a TV guide. For those of you that don't know it, Google it. So I had a TV guide. I remember like I would
basically
see
a paper version of the button on your remote.
yeah.
And they would be like the Batman Beyond, and I read it in Wizard that was coming out, and the coolest thing was in the TV guide.
Google Wizard for those of Google you who don't Wizard know what magazine that is.
If you don't know what that is. But the coolest thing of the tagline for it, because they had like a big description box on it. It was just saying like it's like Batman can defeat any villain or foe except time. And it's now the age Bruce Wayne must go to must mentor the next age of Batman. And I was like, whoa.
That's awesome.
Yeah. See, I had the opposite reaction. I was really mad because in my mind, all that meant was they weren't going to make any more Batman, the animated series.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they were doing Superman and Batman as an hour.
And then that ended.
They both ended for Batman Beyond. And I was just like, oh, we're doing something that's not comics accurate. And they've been doing the comics so well. So I still have a little bit of a harder time with that show than the others, but it is really good. I'm not.
But it still shows up. I mean, it's got you go back and watch it again, just like all of his other stuff, and you watch it as you get older. It's the one cartoon you can go back to time and time again that he's produced, And there's things you're pulling away from that you didn't get as a little kid. Like, it's like, oh, yay, it's Batman. Now it's like, I might have been kind of sick in the head with how dark this is with corporate espionage, corporate takeover, people like destroying other companies.
They weren't afraid to go dark with those shows, right? From the
I would say that with all five series. Is that
There's a lot of dark stuff.
Steven, your favorite episode?
I would do, there's an episode in the Justice League, and it's, I don't know if it's Unlimited or if it's the original season, and it's like the return of Darkseid. And like Brainiac,
I will give you a dollar if you can remember the title of that episode.
Twilight.
Oh,
right. Is it
for
Twilight?
For those of you at home,
is it
John is pulling out a dollar from his wallet?
I don't have a single.
Oh,
I'll take a 20.
I'll give you four quarters.
All right,
John,
I'm
getting four quarters off of
that. That was my best because it's one of those episodes I was watching, and it was there's a fight. He's like fighting him in like Brainiac's spaceship, and then like Batman's just like, Clark, we gotta go. And he's just like, he like slaps Batman across him. He's just like, get out of here now. And then he just like grabs him and like boom tubes him away. And I get like goosebumps from that episode. I was like, whoa, like Superman's like ready to kill him because he got possessed like way back in the Superman animated show. And it was like a thing that had carried for like, that was like 5 or 8 years later.
I love that came back.
But the best part of that was Darkseid's line right after, Superman and Batman leave, and he's right about to blow up. Darkseid just goes, loser.
Yeah. And that came back again for the series finale of Justice League.
Unlimited.
Superman
just watched again.
He's just like, gives this long speech about, like, well.
You think I live in a world of cardboard, but you can take a can't shoot big guy, and he punches him through like six blocks of buildings.
Yeah, he just trashes him.
And that's a Dwayne McDuffie script. And here,
for those of you.
Four quarters.
Yes.
Dave.
My favorite has to be Batman the Animated Series, favorite episode. When they did Mr. Freeze, I think the episode probably called
You Don't Get a Dollar for This.
But it was basically, they talked about Mr. Freeze.
The new Batman Adventures, not Heart of Ice.
Heart of Ice, that is my favorite.
That's one of the first ones. Yeah, that's
favorite
one of the first
episodes.
That's another Paul Dini.
Oh, God, that was the best. To the point where it's like, I think Batman's talking to Alfred, and he's like, did you catch a cold, Master Bruce? And it's like, yeah. And he goes like, here you go. I was like, what's this, nerve toxin? And it's a thermos of chicken soup. And he's like, and Mr. Freeze is choking him, and he pulls out the thermos
and
just throws it at his face. And
it breaks the bubble over his head.
And that's like, I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, and Mr. Freeze is on the floor, and the girl's like, what did you hit him with? The best thing to fight a cold. Chicken soup. It was pretty badass line.
I got to say, too, that's Mr. Freeze's, like, whoever did the redesign on that costume.
Mike Mignola.
Is that, of course that is.
So Mike Mignola.
Yeah. It's like everybody in Hellboy. I think they hired him for a couple freelance, and that's
what he contributed.
And it was always crazy to me because he wore goggles and a bubble, and I'm like, you can make that bubble prescription, right?
Right.
But he looks so...
He looks awesome.
Yeah, and the guy that voiced him. It's like,
Michael Ancera, who played one of the original Klingons in the original Star Trek.
Ooh. How do you know stuff like that?
Treated.
Man, John,
I'm a nerd. That's why I have my own podcast.
Damn
straight. The great thing about that episode was that DC Comics had basically written off Mr. Freeze.
He was a joke character at the time,
and they had killed him off in one of the Robin Limited series. There was, before Robin got his own series, they had him fight the Joker. And there's a two-page thing where, like, Joker comes in and he collects all of his old henchmen. They're like, we're working for Mr. Freeze now. And Joker's like, oh, really? And he shakes Mr. Freeze's hand and, like, electrocutes him with a joy buzzer. And his bubble explodes and he dies.
Holy shit.
And then after that episode, they were like, we have to bring him back somehow. So it's when, while Azrael's Batman in Night Quest, he, like, finds Mr. Freeze's body in the river. And, like, they put it in cold storage and it brings him back to life. Because of that one episode was so great.
Yeah.
That they had to make him a major character. Yeah. So I think it's a perfect episode.
Well, and that introduction is so iconic, too. They still used it throughout when they did the Batman and Superman animated series, that New Adventures. They still have that scene where they show him coming out of
the door's open, the door, and like the mist, him. The cold. That's
it's so iconic. Like, you search it on Google, it'll show up as like one of the first searches for Mr. Freeze, aside from the jokes of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that's great. But this was, I apologize for not getting to all the topics. There was just way too much happened today.
We get sidetracked a lot.
Yeah. As I said, I'm considering us talking about Roger Ebert just by talking about movies for 20 minutes. We covered in Carmen Infantino. So if you want to learn more about Carmen Infantino, just Google him. You'll see a lot of comic covers that you know, that you didn't know who they were.
Famous Silver Age covers.
Yeah. Roger Ebert, I think it's a sad day for the city at large, because that's honestly when I moved here, I was like, well, at least Roger Ebert lives here.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought was so beautiful about Roger Ebert was when he lost his jaw to cancer, he couldn't speak anymore. If you read his reviews, they were beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it was his only form of expression left to him. And I thought it was it was such an inspiring thing that I'm really sad to see him go. And then finally with Bruce Timm, I think we're all agreed that we're in good hands, and at the very least, we have this really long run of great stuff.
That's true.
That's all on DVD, and half of it's streaming all accessible on Netflix, that we can find it again. That's it for this week. I think we'll just wrap it up. We don't have to hit a lot of plugs or anything. It's an emergency podcast. We'll be back next week with something we recorded last month, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah, well, next week we'll
spin the wheel, John.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!